The following podcast is a B&E Network exclusive.
Warning, this podcast contains strong language, which may be unsuitable for children, and stupid humor, which may be unsuitable for adults. Listener discretion is strongly advised. Welcome to the Shit Show.
Coming to you from the seedy underbelly of Omaha, Nebraska, where I bestow upon you this bonus episode to say Happy New Year. Welcome to the Basement on a Hill. We're a horror podcast. My name is Anthony King. You guys can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Scary Shit Radio, and of course, like us on Facebook at The Basement on a Hill. So, you guys, I thought I'd send 2016 off with a smack on the ass and a giant kiss to all of our fans out there by putting up this interview I did a little earlier than I had planned to. So if you listen to our Best of 2016 episode, you heard me talk about something new that we're going to be doing for 2017. And I was inspired after our dear friend Rob Bruns visited the basement. And this is something I've been wanting to do for a long time, but I guess, you know, I just didn't have the balls or the courage or the whatever to, you know, air quotes, make the ask. So, you know, Rob and I, we had this conversation about making the ask. And after he left that night, I decided, you know what, God damn it, I'm just going to do it. So I reached out to a bunch of people in the horror industry to see if they'd be interested in coming on the show. And lo and behold, way more people than I expected happily agreed to it. So I could not be more excited to share with you my conversation with Matt Bettinelli Open and Tyler Gillette of the writing and directing team Radio Silence. Now, Radio Silence is made up of Matt, Tyler, and then a third member, Chad Vieja, who was actually on vacation at the time of the conversation, so he couldn't join us. But these are the guys that are behind hit movies like Devil's Due, Southbound, and VHS. it just blew my mind. They are the absolute sweetest guys in the world. We had a great time. We talked for well over an hour. I had the best time hanging out with them, via Skype. I just want to thank Matt and Tyler for giving me some of their time. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Matt Bettinelli Open and Tyler Gillette of Radio Silence. I want to say that I'm a huge Link 80 fan.
Shut up.
Amazing. Yeah,
seriously. So
amazing.
Yeah, when I was in high school, that was a big thing. So,
oh man, dude, that's great. And we just played a 20-year reunion show.
And what's cool, Mike Park has really helped us out. We play music on our show, and he's put us in touch with a lot of different bands. So he's been really cool to work with.
That's awesome. Yeah, we've done the same thing with Mike. We put his music in all of our like movies, all of our shorts, everything.
Yeah,
he saved our asses so many times.
Asian man music.
Oh yeah, yeah. He's just like the nicest. And I met him one time years and years ago. He came through Omaha doing a solo show, and he's the nicest guy in the world.
Yeah, he's a sweetheart.
Man,
he's a real sweetheart.
You know, I started researching or whatever. And then, of course, the first stop is always Wikipedia. And I was like, get the fuck out of here. Link 80? And because I...
The 90s ska punk band?
Dude, I am constantly surprised by how many people. I feel like, I mean, at least once, I would say one out of every three meetings or people we meet, they are fans of Link 80. It's crazy. It's crazy.
It's super surprising since we never played shows more than like...
Yeah.
When we were in the band,
celebrity after the fact, like that's.
Where are you guys from originally?
I'm originally from Northern Arizona. I grew up in Flagstaff, which is a little town that's like 2 hours south of the Grand Canyon. Yeah, man, and I mean, all my family's from LA, so I've been out in LA for 13 years now. But yeah, dude, it was a great place to grow up out in the wilderness, camping every weekend, and a lot of spooky forests, very, very close by. So yeah, it's great, man. It's one of those, like, it was small, you know, I couldn't wait to get out when I was younger, but the second I left, I was like, fuck, that's a good place to call home.
Right.
And I'm from, Oakland Bay Area.
Okay.
That was, yeah, all Bay Area kids.
And then what, so how did you guys meet? And then with, like, I mean, with Chad too, then.
Chad, who, by the way, apologizes for not being here. He is with his family in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, right?
That's code for he's drunk in some bar in Pittsburgh. Well, Matt and I met, both of our first jobs in LA were at New Line. Matt was there for quite a bit longer than me, but yeah, we were like sort of peripheral friends at New Line, and then started working together.
Agencies. Hey, guy.
Yeah.
The guy who works upstairs.
Yeah, I'll take the mail that you're delivering to my boss. Like, we were both at the same sort of rung of the ladder in different positions. And then Chad and Matt, you guys met.
We met in an acting class that Chad, the day he moved out here, and we were kind of like, I was just kind of trying it out. Like, I wanted to be a writer, and then that was not working very well. So I was like, my girlfriend and my wife was like, take an acting class, learn directing, do other shit. And then, so I took this class, and I met Chad his first day out. We were, like, sitting in the back row, just kind of like, huh, all right, well, what's this all about? And then we became fast friends and kind of started making our own stuff. And then
How long are you guys in that acting class? How long were you there before you left? You
know, honestly, no idea.
It wasn't like, long, though, really, right?
Like, I don't know if you were there for, like, a month or, like, a year. I mean, no, but, I mean, it was fun, but we just decided to kind of do our own thing.
Well, yeah, and so Chad and Matt and Rob Polonsky at the time, they were making Chad, Matt, and Rob videos, and I had seen a few of their things online, and we had a bunch of friends in common, most of whom also worked at New Line, and I just loved their shit so much, and was kind of bouncing around on a bunch of smaller comedy things, and was like, man, these guys have something so cool going on. And so we worked on one project together. What was that? The summer of, I guess, like 2006? Called The Birthday Party. Wait, yeah, later than that. And we've been working together ever since.
We're a horror podcast, so of course that's primarily what we're going to talk about. But, you know, when you were younger, what kind of made you fall in love with the horror genre?
Mine's really easy. Mine was I can't remember what grade I was in. But I was somewhere in elementary school, and we had everybody gets to watch a movie if, you know, you didn't miss a day of school or something at the end of the year. And they had us all in, and they showed us Dream Warriors, Nightmare on Elm Street 3. And it was like the coolest thing I had ever seen. And that was kind of the start for me. I was like, I don't know what the fuck that was. And I know that all of our parents are really mad now.
Yeah, those teachers aren't working anymore.
I mean, this is like in a legit school. You guys watched Dream Warriors?
Oklahoma schools.
Oh my god!
It was. I still. It was like in the auditorium, you know. And it was. I don't know how or who chose it. I'd love to know what teacher was like, I got a great idea for these, you know, K through sixth graders.
I wasn't really. I mean, I didn't have a whole lot of horror films in my childhood. I do remember vividly every time we'd go to the video store to rent a movie, I would sneak away from my dad and go straight to the horror section and would look at all of the, you know, all of the cover art. And then my dad bought me, I mean, the first movie I ever owned was a VHS copy of Killer Clowns from Outer Space. And that, I mean, I was hooked, you know, it's such a fun movie, and it's scary, and it's bizarre, and it's hilarious. And I hadn't, there wasn't, I don't think I was really interested in even making horror stuff until we started working together, Matt. And, you know, we started doing action adventure comedy stuff that always had a really dark, really dark angle to it.
Right.
And we found that it was kind of natural to shift from the comedy horror stuff or comedy like action stuff that with a genre bend and just sort of merge those things.
Yeah, we really love the genre bending shit. It's like,
now did you guys go to film school?
Sort of. I think we both did, right? But
yeah,
like, I don't went to UC Santa Cruz, and our film department was entirely like film theory, and it was very small at the time. This is like in the 90s, and it was I think there was a production angle, but you know, they picked like four kids who got to go shoot a fucking 10-minute movie or something. And I was not one of them.
Yeah.
And so it was, you know, it was all just like film theory, which especially when you're that age, you're just kind of like, oh my God, I don't care. I like movies. I just want
to, you're taking something I love and making it something I am having a hard time loving.
Exactly. It's like, let's make this as difficult as possible. And honestly though, that was kind of cool in terms of it spurred something in like myself and a lot of other people there at the time, because we all wanted to still make stuff. So it just kind of got us into that mode of like, you know, get equipment and go make it, because nobody, not your school, not anybody is going to, you know, let you do shit. Like, you just have to do it.
Right.
And that was kind of my biggest takeaway from film school.
Yeah. And, you know, the school that I went to had more of a production angle to it, but I had the same takeaway. You know, there were a ton of limitations, and it was all set up to be like, the biggest challenge of making stuff was the actual academic side of it. And not, there was nothing like the creativity didn't seem like the hurdle. It was like, how do you kind of navigate making something in that setting and like for a grade, which is such a weird thing. But it was the exact same takeaway. Like, we found a group of people in school that were all kind of making things and having a good time. And it was exactly the same thing. Like, just get a camera, let's go make shit and let's go have fun. And if it's not fun, then it's not worth doing it. And I think that we've certainly carried that philosophy over into how we approach things now.
You know, I went to college for like, I don't know, three semesters until they kicked me out. And I was going for music. And
why'd they kick you out?
Well, I was on a pretty hefty scholarship, and I was just pissing it away. I was spending my whole time in the practice room and not going to, like, you know, my English comp class and my history stuff and that kind of stuff. And, you know, all I wanted to do was go out and play gigs and, you know, try to make money doing it that way. So, you know, I kind of feel you in that respect. It's like, I just want to get out and do the thing instead of, you know, sitting in a classroom and having somebody talk at me saying, this is how you do the thing. I just want to do the thing.
And it's hard to understand what people are telling you until you've done it. And then, like, in hindsight, I've been able to apply a lot of stuff where I'm like, oh, now I understand what they're talking about. But when I don't have, like, the foundation of what the basics are,
right,
you can talk about all this, you know, elevated stuff all day, but it won't land because it has nothing to stick to.
Right.
I also feel like we went to school at a time when film was leaving and the digital video side of things was really picking up, which was, I think that a lot of programs now, I mean, honestly, if we could go back to school now, I'm sure that those programs would be so different, just because everyone's ability to make something is so much easier, and the understanding of what the process is on a smaller scale now, because of what's available to people, is just different, right? The approach is different, and it was a much more, oh, for it to be called art or for it to be called a film, it has to look a certain way on set, and there's got to be like all of these people, and which is just not, it's just not the case, you know?
Right.
And oftentimes, like, those are the things that make it harder to make the thing that you want to make than the things that actually serve the making of it.
Right.
And of course, it's all like budget dependent, and, you know, depending on the idea, but at that stage, like, it's, you should just go grab a camera and a microphone and go make shit with your buddies.
Now, okay, so after school, what was the first project that each of you worked on where you were like, wow, it's actually working. I can actually make a living doing this.
I don't know if we've had that one.
I was just gonna say, I retract that question. Have you even reached up, you know?
I think it's funny. I think our specific path has been so bizarre, especially since, you know, of course you want to do what you love and make a career out of it, and much like a band, since we work with a group of guys, the making it a career has obviously been a little more difficult, because it's not like we just get a job and then you get paid for your job and then you pay your bills and you're good. It's like we have a unique little weird collective thing going on, so it's like, but I think we got kind of lucky in terms of, like, the way we started making stuff was almost out of, like, kind of a naivete where it was like, let's just go make it. Let's shoot it at work after hours, because then we get cool sets, you know, or, like, cool production design. It's free. It looks like an office, whatever. And then into, like, oh, now that's slowly becoming more real and something that we can do. And then we got like into the movie stuff, and then that was working well for us. And I feel like it was just a very slow, natural progression. Do you know what I mean? Like, where we didn't really change much about what we were doing. All of a sudden, we were just like, wow, we're spending a lot more time on this.
And yeah, it just became more full time. But I will say, though, yeah. I mean, I had worked on a ton of stuff before, just little things before I started working with Chad and Matt. And when we connected and we shot the birthday party, there was just something, I don't know, there was something, like, at the risk of sounding cheesy, there was just something like kind of magical about it. Like, that whole process, I felt like we all knew that we were having a great time, number one.
Yeah,
we were just
really
having fun. But I think that there was just a sense of like how special it was, not that what we were making was special, but there was just something like, oh, this feels right. There was something that felt like conceptually what we were making, the tone that we were exploring, that it just felt, there was this weird kind of intuition that was like, oh shit, this is the stuff that I love. I'm making the thing that I want to see, that I want to watch. And I think that's just the feeling that we look for now whenever we're making something, is like, is this something that we want to watch? Is this something that we're excited about actually seeing? And if it is, then it feels like putting the energy into then making it is kind of, it's sort of easy.
Right.
if you know you're going to love what it is you're making.
Right. So at what point did like the three of you, or was there four of you when you first decided, okay, we're going to go by this moniker Radio Silence. Was there four of you, or was it?
Yeah, it was what we were doing is we were doing this other thing, Chad, Matt, and Rob. And then I'll make this brief as fucking possible because it's pretty important. And then Rob basically left to get a real job because, you know, we were struggling. And then that's when we got VHS, which was our first movie as Radio Silence. And it was our other friend, Justin Martinez, was a part of the group. And then he since moved on to other things. But it was the four of us. It was basically Rob left, and literally the VHS thing happened. And it was us not wanting to just put one person's name on it, which was what they requested. They were like, so who do we say directed this? And we're like, can we just make up something?
Oh.
And, you know, Brad Miska of Bloody Disgusting, who produced that, was like, sure, just can you do it in the next, like, 30 minutes? Because I got to let the, you know, people know.
People at Sundance, yeah, that's Sundance program.
Oh my God, seriously?
Yeah.
So where did that name come from? I mean, it's creepy as fuck. Like, I mean, just the term Radio Silence is super creepy, but where did that come from? I mean, was it seriously?
Its origin is not creepy at all.
Okay.
that's what we liked about it, is we were like, oh, it has such a cool kind of like feel tone to it. Yeah, but the origin is the opposite. The origin is just, and it gets back to the when do you, you know, go from being able to like struggle to do it to being like, oh wait, we can do this. Like, we can do this. And it was the minute we started getting involved with other people outside of our core little group that we were making things with, it became just every contact was Radio Silence. It'd be like, hey, we sent them this cool script. Let's see if we can make this, Radio Silence. Hey, you know, they said they wanted to do this, Radio Silence. And we'd say it all the time because we're like, wow, okay. So the lesson here is, you can't rely on anybody to help you. Just, I mean, and ultimately, of course, you can. But at the time, it sure felt like you couldn't.
Oh, for sure, yeah. So did Brad approach you, or like, how did the whole VHS thing come about?
VHS came about. We had made a short called "The Mountain Devil Prank Fails Horribly," and we put it up on, you know, up on our channel on YouTube. And Matt actually emailed Brad Miska under an alias to like. We knew that, I mean, we were fans of Brad, fans of Bloody Disgusting. We sent him this little horror short that we made. Who is your alter ego? Your 16-year-old female alter ego?
I saw this cool thing and, you know, yo, just check it out, man. It's kind of neat. And then Brad emailed me / my alter ego back within like 20 minutes and was like, hey, I really like this. Did you make it? And I was like, no. I can put you in touch with who did. Yeah. So then we got in touch through that, and we just started kind of hanging out when he was in town and or around like our area of town. And then
VHS was still just a TV concept, right? Yeah. He was trying to turn it into a TV show.
It was going to be a TV show. And then basically it was like we did some stuff with him, tried to get involved, and then it disappeared, and it was like radio silence. And then out of nowhere, he called us, I don't know, 6 months later, maybe more, and was like, hey, remember that thing? So now it's a movie. I got like Adam Wingard and Simon Barrett doing the wrap around, and you know, and Joe Swanberg and Glenn, and we need one more segment. Can you guys jam it? You have like 2 weeks.
Oh shit.
Or 3 weeks or whatever. Insane turnaround it was.
Yeah, it was so crazy.
Course,
I think
like, yeah, of course we can. Absolutely. We'll get you ideas tomorrow.
It was like, I think from Soup to Nuts, it was like 5 weeks or something from the time that we, that from that phone call until we delivered our, the sort of, a, I mean, I guess it was kind of a rough for, you know, for the cut that went to, ultimately went to Sundance. That was like a 5 week process. It was crazy.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And it was actually,
know what it was. I mean, yeah. You know, I don't think anybody involved thought it was going to go to Sundance. So that was wild when it got into Sundance, because then all of a sudden it became this kind of different thing where it was like, wait, what? This is really weird. Like,
I'm so glad that we didn't. I feel like had any of us known that that was, I mean, I guess you don't ever really know what the goal of something is. You just like make it, hopefully, and people will see it. But it would have been such a different project if there was the pressure of that, like sort of sitting on it, you know, you approach things maybe slightly differently. And it was just this weird punk rock experiment. There were all these fucking guys that we were super big fans of involved. And we were like, okay, shit, let's just step up our game and make something fun and in the style that we're familiar with. And, you know, we certainly knew, having made stuff in the past, that we could work fast and that we could kind of pull off some potentially cool effects work and over deliver on some of that stuff. And that was, I mean, we're so grateful to that project. It was like, it was such a fun thing to make and such a fun ride.
So, since like, it's, like the anthology thing, what was your relationship or like contact with like Adam and David and Ty and Joe? Okay. So you're all just doing your own thing and then they put it together.
Yeah, and then we met Simon. Simon was the first person we met of the other directors at the Sundance. Like, they have like a little meet and greet here in LA, you know, before the festival.
Right.
And so we're like, oh, cool, that'll be fun, some free drinks. And then Simon was there, and we were like, oh man, this dude's awesome. This guy is a character. And he was like, so, he couldn't have been more open arms and sweet, and just like made us feel very comfortable. Because like Tyler was saying, you know, we were the ones who nobody knew, and we didn't know any of them, and so it was kind of like weird, and it's like, oh no, you know. And then we didn't meet anybody else until we actually got to Sundance, and we're like all basically rooming together, where it was like, hi guys, well
yeah,
like, movies, this is really weird, because we're just like on the block.
Oh my God.
had no idea what to expect, and I couldn't have been more blown away by how awesome everyone was. I mean, we're still in touch with all those dudes. I feel like that you know, that film brought together this family of people that, I mean, we're all still in touch. Like, we give notes on each other's projects, and, you know, Dave and Adam came in and watched the cut of Devil's Due when we made it and gave us notes. I mean, they're just like such good people. And yeah, it's like, we couldn't have imagined that movie would be what it is. And we're just so stoked about it.
Yeah. Oh man. I mean, I went back and watched your segment today, this afternoon, and, excellent musical choices, of course, when you're in the car.
Park.
Yeah.
MU330.
Yeah. Now, I know next to nothing about, you know, being in the film business. So I don't know if there's like secrets that filmmakers don't like to share, whatever. But I have just a simple technical question, like with the nanny cam. Like, was that like for real, or are you, Tyler, are you just like holding the camera?
No, that camera was actually rigged to my head. I mean, it was not a nanny cam. We bought the smallest HD camera that we could find. And obviously, I mean, our short takes place in 1998. So we wanted to treat it like it was shot on high eight.
Right.
But to do that, to pull that off on a production level, we had to have something smaller than a high eight camera. So we found a really small Sony Handycam and actually handmade a rig that attached the camera to the side of my head. And it had a video out jack on it so that we could have a monitor for the scenes that we knew there was going to be effects work in. just to have somebody, you know, Justin looking at the monitor, making sure that we were actually,
right,
you know, actually getting what we needed in front of the camera so that he could add the effects work. But I mean, honestly, what we wanted to do, and I think the reason that we ultimately made that choice to make it a wearable camera was we wanted, and this is a challenge of found footage in general, is you want your audience at some point to kind of forget that they're watching a found footage, you know, movie and just engage in the ride. And we knew that if the characters would forget about it, that the audience would hopefully also forget about it. So we wanted something that could just be, you see it once in a mirror, you see him putting it on, and then, you know, after that, it's just kind of, it's just rolling the whole time. You don't have to continue to address why we're seeing what we're seeing. It's just there. And then you know, you're off to the races.
Everything Tyler just said, we had talked about a lot, got to that point. We're like, cool, this is exciting, this is gonna be fun. And then watching the first cut of VHS at like for a sound, you know, mix thing, and seeing Dave Bruckner's, where he literally does the same thing with the guy puts the glass, and us just over each other and going, fuck!
Okay, so did you guys know ahead of time, like, what everybody else was doing, or was it... No, okay, so you're just...
I feel like we've gotten, like, maybe little snippets of, like, a log line here or a log line there, but nothing of any sort of, no detail about any of the other shorts
were. Oh, my...
Yeah, it was like, guys go out and have a bad night, you know, and then the next one was like, oh, a vacationing couple. And you're like, okay, I can't do much with these. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, just think how... How horribly wild that'd be if, you know, all the clips came in and it turns out everybody kind of did almost the same thing. Kind of.
Well, I mean, when it comes to found footage, like, you can kind of, it's sort of limited. I mean, in terms of, like, what the conceit is of how you see something. So, I mean, I think that was definitely.
What's weird about the found footage thing, and, you know, obviously we could talk about found footage all fucking day, but, like, there's like a weird, you know, I think, like, a lot of people watch it, you know, and it's just found footage. And then there's like a very small group of people who are like really into it and understand like the real intricacies of like, well, that camera is over there because it's this and it represents that. And this camera is a whole different perspective. And that is like, you know, 1% of people who watch movies for the most part. And so it's really funny because when you talk to people on either side of those lines, the perspective of the entire movie will shift. Which is like really bizarre when you don't have that experience in non-found footage movies. People just watch it and you just take it in, and then it is what it is. Whereas found footage has this weird little other element where, like, it's what Tyler's saying about it being so limited that 1% of people who like to nerd out on it will be like, oh, but how does that get pushed? You know what I mean? How do you tweak that?
I mean, I found it unique because I didn't actually see the original VHS until... just last year, because I saw VHS 2 first, and then I went back and watched VHS, and I mean, with it's Siren Now, whatever that first clip
was. Yeah, Amateur Night.
I just found that like your segment, it was just unique in the fact that you had kind of the nanny cam thing, and I mean, Tyler, you're right, like it. I was completely lost. Like, you forget about the camera and you forget that you're watching found footage, and like, you're kind of going through the house with these guys because, you know, cause it is almost, you know, it's up by the eyes. And so you're actually, you can't tell that, you know, somebody's holding just a camera down here doing whatever.
Well, I think we definitely also, I mean, I have hours and hours and hours of video that I shot that I'll never watch again. Like, you just shoot. I mean, I grew up skateboarding. We just shot hours and hours of video that feels kind of worthless. And we liked the idea that, like, these guys who are all good buddies would just go and record this night. They probably would never watch it again. They just happened to, like, be recording on the craziest fucking night of their lives.
Right.
And they're not even aware. They don't set out to capture that event. They just happened to capture that fucking event. And that was something that we thought was really unique to found footage. The idea that, you know, oftentimes you have a really clear setup, like, oh, we're going to go film this thing. And the movie, the story is the event of going and filming the thing. And we liked the idea of just like, oh, a bunch of buddies go out for a night. One of them has a camera because, like, of course, we all had cameras and we all did that shit as kids. And they just happened to stumble into, like, the craziest thing any of them have ever seen.
Right. So, okay, that house, I mean, is that an actual house?
100%.
I mean, even the basement?
Yep.
Holy
cow. Every single part of that house is exactly as it is in the movie.
Oh, my God.
It's called Woodman Estates or Woodbury?
Woodbury, maybe? The Woodbury Estate. Woodbury Mansion. Woodbury House, yeah.
In Altadena. And we found it. I think Chad's friend knew about it or something. They've shot, like, porn there and shit. I mean, it's like...
Chad, actually, we were scouting it, and Chad was like, hey, this is the house from Coed Confidential's 18 or whatever.
Sweet. Well...
But, yeah, it's a real house. It's a creepy fucking house.
Yeah, because I figured it, you know, you're watching, and I'm like, oh, this is a really cool house. I'm assuming it's real. But then the basement, you're like, no, that house... Like, that's got to be a set
no,
of
right
some,
there.
Man.
No, I mean, dude, in that attic, I mean, how long did we walk around? We saw, when we were looking at location photos, we knew that there was an attic because we saw photos of an attic. We couldn't find the fucking attic. We walked around the house for like an hour and couldn't find the attic. And it's literally like the entrance to the attic is in that weird bathroom.
That is so fucking
like
weird.
Bizarre, perfect place.
So
yeah.
Weird.
Wow, okay.
And that place is right next to a police station. Literally, it's the parking lot outside is a police station.
Oh, man, that's weird. Now, okay, my final question about VHS. Matt, when you whip Chad with that sword, do you really hurt him?
Yes. No question. Chad and I have acted together a lot, and we do not have the safety boundaries that a lot of professionals have.
Tell me about your writing process. How does that work with, you know, if two of you or three of you are writing this one thing, tell me about your writing process. Because I'm a writer. I write plays and musicals. But I only, like, when I do musicals, I do the libretto and the music and the lyrics all myself because I still haven't found a way to work with someone, like collaborate with someone else. So for your writing process, how does that work?
I mean, it's for us, it's a lot like a writer's room where it's like, we just sit together. The actual writing of the actual script is often the kind of like the simplest part. It's more us sitting around and saying, well, like, what do we want to do? What's the idea? And going from there and then like really taking our time, you know, getting the beats, getting the story, getting the themes and the concepts and everything kind of down so that then when we're actually just doing the script is just kind of like putting what we've already decided to do on paper. You know what I mean?
Right.
And a lot of things like with VHS, for example, there's a lot of our earlier stuff. And even today, to a certain extent, we always leave a ton of room. If we know we're shooting it, if it's something we're shooting, especially if it's something we're in, we leave a ton of room for like improv and like getting on the location and then kind of working it into the location.
Yeah,
you know?
That's huge. Location thing is a huge, I mean, and that's part of us just approaching things with usually so little budget to shoot with. You have to steer into the stuff that you have, and the writing really, I mean, VHS, we had an idea. I mean, it was literally just a concept until we walked into the house, and we spent like 4 hours one day walking through the entire house, writing the script room for room.
Yeah, it was like the idea is like they go to a party and X, Y, and Z happen. And then we find the house and we're like, okay, here's where X happens. Well, Y can't happen. But what if we do this other thing over there? Because that'll work great and that's where we need the scare. So let's make everything malleable. That's kind of always our version of it for when it's something like that we're shooting on our own.
Oh, man. I mean, that really makes a lot of sense because it's very realistic. I mean, a lot of that stuff, I felt like, no, they couldn't have, like, this isn't completely scripted, like, the little stuff they're saying, or, I mean, for all, you know, maybe it was, I don't know, but
no,
yeah,
no.
Like, you're there, and you're in the moment, and you're just, like, you know, going, like you said, a little bit of improv here and there.
It's just, I mean, like, leaving room for improv, and it's also the great thing of the technology is that, you know, we can shoot this scene where we walk from this room to that room 5 times.
Right.
Because
decide that we don't need it, and it's not a loss. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like we're wasting time, especially in something like that where you don't need like a shit ton of lights and you need a 360-degree environment. So it's like you can just keep doing it and just keep going and kind of, you know, figure it out in post.
It's one of the hard things about working on something that's slightly larger where there's more of a production machine behind it is how do you design it to be something that is efficient but that also still has room for the accidents that we think are really a part of what makes our process and our stuff like have it's a unique identity, you know, that nothing that we've made would be what it is if we hadn't left room for to be inspired by like the place that we shoot it or, you know, the kind of limitations of what it is. So when you don't have those limitations, it becomes a much harder thing. You have to conceive of a world and conceive of you know, a thing so completely. And we find that
we're too lazy for that, huh?
Yeah, with a limitation to a certain extent, like you get what you get and you do the best with it, and then it like that informs the tone and that informs the sense of realism of those moments
for sure. Talk about you know, collaborating again, but as a directing team, how does that work?
It's really similar to how we approach the writing process. You know, it's kind of we sort of treat the whole thing like a writer's room, from the actual writing to how things work, you know, during the directing of things. I mean, obviously there are certain roles that get kind of delineated to make things more efficient on set, but we always treat the process is always really democratic, and it's really always about trying to find the best idea wherever it comes from. And so it's a lot of prep work. Obviously, we try to get as much dialed in conceptually as we can before we ever show up on set, so that when we arrive, it's like, okay, you go talk to the cast, have them, you know, this is what we're doing, have them do this. You go do this thing with the, you know, the technical side of things. Like, let's all just kind of approach it as one big, you know, as one big cohesive unit and do things as efficiently as possible.
So you all act too. Do you guys prefer, you know, one side of the camera over the other? Yes, you guys act. Like, I love your acting because, I mean, it was just kind of what we were talking about. It's not like you're not just reading lines. Like, you, like in VHS or even in Southbound, and I know, Tyler, you're not in Southbound, right, Tyler?
No.
Okay. But, like, I mean, you're in – it sucked me in. So, but do you guys prefer one side of the camera over the other?
You know, it's funny. It's like I love it when we're in it, like when we're acting. It's a lot of fun for us, mainly because of the stuff we make.
Right.
Is like, oh, we're, you know, fighting a fucking alien. We're, you know, running from a monster. We're like, you know, that's just
it's so fun. Active. Man. Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's really fun. so yeah, for me, it's kind of like. It's all, and it gets back to what Tyler just said about the way we treat directing, the way we treat the writing. It's all one big part of the same process, you know?
Right.
And I know, like, the stuff like that, like, when I'm not in it too, I sometimes feel like, oh man, I want to be over there, you know, doing this stunt right now. Like, but it's also kind of a bummer because none of it is for, like, this, like, intense love of acting. It's more just like I like playing, you know?
I mean, I remember on VHS, and I hadn't acted in anything in like years and years and years when we did VHS. And I remember, Matt, you and I had sort of an aside on the staircase. We were shooting the beat where they first see the crazy shit in the attic, and they run and they stop in the foyer, and they're, you know, they decide to go back upstairs. And we had done like four or five takes of that, and we were all just exhausted. I think I actually ran into the banister and like cut my chest open on. I mean, we were like beaten up. And it was so much fun. I remember like pulling you aside, and I was like, dude, this is the most fun I think I've ever had. And it was like we were just a bunch of adults running around in a house in Altadena playing make believe, and it was like fantastic. It was so great.
Let's talk about Devil's Due. Now, I'll be 100% honest with you. I'd never heard of this movie until like probably, I don't, you know, when I was like, oh, I want to reach out to these guys and checked out IMDb. I thought, oh, Devil's Due. Cool. So anyways, I went out and got it and watched it. And I really, really enjoyed it. Did you guys know the writer Lindsay Devlin? Is that right?
Yeah.
Did you Thanks know her before sign like doing this?
Not at all. We met her right before we were shooting, basically.
Yeah, a real fast process. That project, I think, was 18 months from when we from the first phone call we got until it released. I think it was like just a year and a half. You know, it was super like breakneck speed.
Yeah, yeah.
Process.
Now, what was the biggest difference? Because I know you guys were working with more money on this project. What was the biggest difference between VHS and then coming on to do Devil's Due?
I think the biggest difference was, and this is in no way a negative, but is that we didn't write it.
Hmm.
So that for us was like, okay, you know, this is let's figure out how to make this ours. You know what I mean? And so that took some time, and it was like it was an interesting process. But you know, I think that was the big one. And then the other one was, and this is going to sound really weird, but was trying to do, you know, and to the extent that we succeeded or failed at this, I'm not really sure. But it's trying to do, in a way, what we did with VHS, where we were like, let's shoot this on fucking, you know, consumer cameras. Let's make everything as fucking authentic as possible. Let's like, let's not get wrapped up in the like, we can do cool shit, and let's just stick to the roots and stick to what we like to do and do it that way, you know? And even if though studio, to their credit, they let us do a bunch of that shit. I mean, Tyler, did we shoot on anything that wasn't a consumer camera?
No, man, it was all like Sony EX3s and Canon 5Ds. But that was like a big win for us right off the bat. I think that certainly when you are working on like on a studio project, there's this fear that you have to do things a different way, right? That you have to like now sort of subscribe to the identity of being a director in this new way.
Right.
And we had to keep reminding ourselves that the reason that we got the project was because of what we'd done in the past. So all you have to ultimately do is show up and try to do the same thing that you've done before with more resources and with a different story. And that was, I think there was certainly like a learning curve there and a bit of an evolution, but you know, I mean, we found, and honestly, like the crew, we can't say enough about how amazing it was to work with all those folks. I mean, it was like such a great charmed process. I will also say though that the other big kind of challenge of that project was trying to make a POV movie that was long form.
Right.
I mean, all the found footage stuff that we had done in the past was, I mean, previous to VHS, I think the longest thing that we'd made that was in that style was like 3 minutes and 17 seconds. And then you have to like, design that conceit to work for an hour and a half. Like that's a crazy, I don't know, it was an hour and 23 minutes or however long Devil's Due is.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a really different challenge, right? Like if you're kind of playing by the rules of found footage,
those rules. We were like, let's stick to like every right. camera has a point of view. Every camera represents a character. Every camera, you know what I mean? Or like, I'm not literally a character, but
right.
Right.
You know, these are the bad guys. These are the, you know,
but those rules kind of dictate that it's like the story ends when you're at the climax because the camera gets destroyed or the characters get killed or it runs out of batteries. Like there are all these things. And in a longer form story, you have to keep sort of redesigning the engine of why the camera is there. And that was a really unique challenge for that.
And product. You don't want it to get boring visually where you're like, you don't want it to be all static, you know, in the corner cam. And you also don't want it to be nonstop handheld, you know? And it's like, how do you, the same way you create pace in a story, how do you create pace, like a visual pace with found footage?
Right. So was that written into Lindsay's script where these guys come in and put the security cams in? Or was that sort of a thing that you guys brought up thinking, let's mix this up a little bit?
Yeah, that was us brought that up.
Yeah.
The original script was, I think, you know, I'm sure I have one around here actually because I have a 4-month-old, but the little baby monitors.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Things.
But yeah. That was the big, I would say that's the big change that we brought to it. Yeah.
Yeah. That and the external, like the cult, that was our other big, like,
yeah.
We felt there needed to be a like a an antagonist, yeah. You know, like a real, like, this had these people are doing something that, you know, we can keep it mysterious, but these people are doing something and they are against this family and this child and this, you know.
Yeah, and it literally, I mean, at the midpoint to the minute of the movie, the perspective shifts. You're now actually watching the family from the perspective of the antagonist instead of from this sort of intimate right. camera within this couple that we hopefully have fallen in love with over
the. It's a weird choice to make. Like, so we start the movie really intimate, really, really close. And then the second half of the movie is going to be distant and cold.
I don't know. I really dug it, and I was super impressed. I want to talk about Southbound. First off, congratulations on that Rolling Stone article that just came out.
Yeah, that's a good. That feels nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I remember because it came to VOD and then like went on Prime. It was this year, right?
Yeah, it okay. released in February. And was on Prime, I think, in like, man, I don't know exactly when it came out, but yeah, man, that was a good, that we had a blast with that project.
By the way, Matt's frozen with the thumbs up.
That thumbs up, Matt. You were frozen with the thumbs up.
Did Miska produce this one too? Right.
He did.
Yeah.
Okay. So, talk about how this came around.
It was very similar.
I love the teddy bear, by the way. Love it.
It was a lot of like us and Miska staying, you know, I mean, we became very good friends with him through the VHS process. And so it was a lot of like, let's go make a fucking movie together. Let's make a movie together. And then, you know, things would always happen and we never would. And then we had like this lull where, you know, we were like, we want to go make something that's like ours, that we feel really a lot of ownership of, that is just, we can be weird and experimental. And basically Miska called and was like, hey, listen, I've talked to this guy. He can get us a little money. If you guys come up with a concept, I'll take it to him. We can be shooting this thing in like a month. So let's just do it. And we were like, cool, fuck it. And we sat around one day down at the farmer's market, which is this place that we always work in LA. And came up with the idea of like no wraparound, start at the end, have that be the thing that creates this kind of, you know, circular thing.
Yeah.
And then let's leave it really open and, you know, work with the people that we are all like super cool with and like their shit, and then really help build that together. And that was kind of the initial pitch. Like, here's our rough segments, meet some guys, and then here's the home invasion, blah, blah, blah. And then let's leave the rest open. And then, you know, from there, it was like, we just got together and Miska was, you know, via Skype in we were over at Roxanne's house in a little, red
phone,
so we could hear him.
Yeah, speakerphone.
Yeah. And it became like just everybody that, you know, ended up making the movie, and Miska and Chris Harding, who was one of the producers. And we just sit around once a week, work on the scripts, send them to each other, get back in the room
pizzas.
For like, yeah. What, a month maybe?
Yeah, and a month.
We were just off shooting.
Yeah, it was one of those things where there were so many things that could have gone wrong. And I mean, obviously everyone had other things going on and lives to live. And that's one of the big challenges with an anthology, especially. And what was so different about Southbound from VHS, while, you know, in VHS, we all just sort of got a small bag of money and, you know, we're told, go make your segment, deliver us something. And with Southbound, we wanted to treat it more as a feature instead of an anthology. We wanted to really build a story. We wanted it to feel like you were sitting down and you were watching something that had continuity, even though it was different from segment to segment. It felt like it was all in the same world and that the story was progressing, that you were learning about the mythology of where everyone is and why everyone is there. And that just required us all to be in the same room designing it. And it was... It was such a blast. It was such
That's
a blast.
One of the funny things about it is that part of the kind of the allure for us and everybody else involved was, this is something that we can do on our own. No one's going to tell us anything. It's just go make it. And it's not going to take up a ton of our time. Like, we can all still focus on our other things, but this will be something that we can do. But because it's an anthology, it doesn't take as long because you're not shooting for, you know, a month, you're shooting for a week, etc. And then that was, none of that happened. we None spent as happened. Much time on Southbound because everybody got so involved. You know,
we like just we ended up all making the same feature for a year.
We just made a feature with like 25 directors and.
Well, it was, I watched it again today. I've watched it, I don't know, probably half a dozen times just because I what I was going to say when we first started talking about it was I watched it as soon as it came out on VOD and loved it. And then, I've watched it so many times now. And every time at the end for your final segment with that reveal, when Chad holds up the photo of his daughter, it all just kind of makes sense because the first segment you're like, I mean, I'm assuming, correct me if I'm wrong, but like you're sort of mirroring how it's just kind of this endless cycle that just goes around and around and around with Chad, you know, in the hotel, and then with you two always hitting the and I gotta say, it's hysterical every time you pull up to the diner. You're like, what the fuck? It gets funnier every time I watch. I don't know.
Like that. That's the stuff that we never know. We think it's funny, but we're always like, I don't know if people will find this funny, but we think it's funny.
Well, I do, you know.
Thank you.
No, I mean, I think one of the original ideas that we had when we were brainstorming was that we sort of loved and wanted to make a reality in the project was playing with the idea that the characters that you meet in the beginning that you hopefully relate to because they're running from something scary, and you associate them, you call them the protagonists, that by the end of the movie, you see that they're like really terrible dudes and they're running from something they actually deserve. We thought that was such a weird and interesting way to approach the quote wraparound, like the two sort of pillars that hold up the world of the movie. That was one of the first things that we had
I was like, that
designed.
And it's funny because what you're talking about, like with the picture at the end and it clicking, the whole, you know, and again, this becomes one of those things where you never know if it's working or not, but the idea with the opening segment was that's not really supposed to be like a standalone segment. You know what I mean? It's supposed to just be kind of a, here's something kind of a little high octane. It's going to make you ask a ton of fucking questions. And it's going to kind of set the world in permissions. And that's it. And then everything else is kind of when it really goes.
Yeah.
That was the goal. So like really, that opening is supposed to be, you're supposed to just be like, huh?
For God's sakes, his name, who's playing the DJ? His name escapes me.
Oh, Larry Fessenden.
Yeah, Fessenden. You know, his voice comes on and you're like, okay, I'm in for a ride. And then you watch that first segment and it's like, what is going on here? But then, you know, as you watch, you know, you just keep going through and you see how, I mean, I just love how each one connects to the other. And in that last segment, I got to ask, what in the hell are those masks that you guys are wearing?
Your guess is as good as ours.
We found some masks that our costume designer did some work on enhancing. But well, honestly, that one of the hardest things to do in a horror film is to find a cool mask. It is like the amount of time we spent trying to come up with or find something that was scary was just like, I mean, I don't know how many hours.
Yeah, those for us was like the, once we saw them and they kind of landed with us, we're like, oh, it's so awesome for us conceptually to have these guys who are stuck in this fucking purgatory loop to, you see their, you know, younger, you know, late 30s faces, and then you see, oh, and then they're wearing these masks of these basically old versions of themselves, you know, which for us was just something that like, that's a plot thing. That was just like on a kind of thematic conceptual level that we were like, oh, we really like that. Like that makes the masks for us not just feel like here's a scary thing to cover my face, but here's something that plays into like the hellish world that these dudes are stuck in, you know?
Yeah, here's a version of ourselves that we'll never be because we're fucking stuck forever in this like endless day.
Things.
Yeah.
Between these three, you guys are like exploring different subgenres of horror. So like in VHS, you got the haunted house, and then for Devil's Do, you have like a possession or like, I don't know, pregnancy horror, whatever it is. Right. And then, like with at least your two segments in Southbound, I don't know what you would call the first one, but the second one, like a home invasion type of thing. Yeah. Is there a plan to all of this where you like you just want to kind of be so broad and like you're open to doing anything, or is there like something that you really really want to tackle?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny that you bring that up because it's like for us, part of the fun thing from where we started doing Chad Mountain Rob stuff was because it was internet, because it was short little mini things, you had to lean on like pre-existing ideas and then do 180 on it, you know, and be like, okay, cool. So like, let's go to, for example, the VHS one, which was originally a Chad Mountain Rob idea, was let's go to a haunted house party that then turns into like a real fucking haunted house and blah, blah, blah. And so it was like this, it's this, at the very beginning of this conversation, we talk about genre bending, utilizing all of these cool genres that we grew up loving and like, or not even genres, subgenres that we just grew up fucking loving. There's just something fun about trying all of these different like things. And then Southbound was actually originally called Subgenre. Oh. And the initial concept was that each of the segments would be a different subgenre. And ours were going to be, we were doing like a road movie was the beginning. That's what that, this is, you know, stage one of the process. And then the end was a home invasion. And then the in-between ones were going to be their own different subgenres. And then our way too overthought big umbrella subgenre was that, oh, and then it's like a psychological horror because the whole thing, is it a loop? Is it not a loop? You know, and of course, a lot of that fell by the wayside as the movie came together. But that was the initial idea behind the entire thing.
I think that there's a really fun challenge that we, whether we like say it outright or not, when we start a project, is how do we build on the things that we already love, and how do you do it in a way that's different? And I think that's a really fun, it's just a question we're always asking ourselves when we're designing something, like, okay, cool, but is this feels too much like this. What's the evolution of that idea? What's the evolution of that subgenre? What if we did this instead? And sometimes it ends up being an entirely different subgenre than what ultimately inspired the project to begin with. But we just love the idea, and obviously are fans of all kinds of movies, but taking what we love about, you know, what made us want to make films to begin with, and trying to just do something weird and different with it.
I mean, with Devil's Due, our pitch to the studio that got us the job was that we want to do like a, you know, an intimate horror version of a horror thriller, because it was a lot more thrillery, of The Notebook. We were like, we want to do something where you just get really deep in, and you just watch their lives without the happy, well, not happy ending. I won't say The Notebook has a happy ending. Without right, the but, emotionally uplifting ending.
Right. Oh my God, that is, oh, wow. Okay, I see it.
I don't know how that got us a job. I mean,
well, whoever you were talking to is probably like, oh, fuck that movie. I hate The Notebook. Let's do it.
That was a crazy Hail Mary pass, that pitch.
All right, the last thing I want to talk about your podcast. I've been listening, and I mean, it's fascinating because, I mean, you guys are like going super deep with people, you know, like, oh, your last one with the AD. It's like, you right. never hear from these guys. And it's, I mean, exactly. I love it. It's great. Yeah. So what crawled into your ear one day and was like, oh, let's start a podcast.
I mean, Tom Newell crawled into our ear. Tom was he very literally, he was the DIT on Southbound. And he's like, this is a super cool kid that we hang out with. And he kept getting on, we're not good with like social media. We're very bad at any kind of like interaction. And just because we're just old and like busy and like, you know what I mean? But Tom was like, you guys got to do a fucking podcast. And so for like, I don't know, months, you know, we just kind of hang out, get beers, and like, he'd bring it up occasionally, be like, when are we doing this podcast? And it was like, okay, but we're not just going to do a podcast. Like, let's make it about something that we feel we can speak to. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
And the thing that the thing that really hit us was like, that these roles on movies, that the movie doesn't exist without these people, and it's what you were saying, you never hear from them. Like, we were on set shooting a studio movie, And we're like, so wait, art department, I have no idea what you do. I mean, I have like ideas, but like, and there's four of you, and what do you, you know what I mean? It was like, so it was a real like trial by fire and kind of learn as you go sort of thing. And we just have become really close friends with everybody we work with. We become really close friends with, partly because we have this such a collaborative style that it just is really fun and we get to know everybody. And it just felt like, why aren't these people and these jobs as, you know, held as in high regard as a lot of the other jobs? It's like,
yeah, to say that, like, to say that one person, that the director is responsible for the vision of something is like, it's inaccurate. I mean, there's so much that has to happen for something to work. And it's very, I think, very rare that that like one person's responsible for it working. And to be honest, I mean, when we started making shit, it was only ever just like the five of us and the four of us and now the three of us. And we were all kind of doing all these things ourselves. And when we finally had the opportunity to work with people who were just exceptional
at
that shit. Yeah, it was like, I mean, we were as fascinated by that as we hope people are by hearing from these, you know, these people that are really responsible. Like, the movies are built on the backs of everyone that works on them, but only a few people ever get to like hold the megaphone and talk about the work. And it's just not, that's just not the case. Like, it's so crazy. It's so fucking crazy how many people it takes to make something work. And we just, I think we're in awe, honestly, of like the process and how, and we're learning, like, we're not experts in any way. Like, we're just making shit and trying to figure things out. And obviously, like, there are new relationships every time you get involved in a project. And it's just really awesome we hope that it's educational. Like, we hope that we're able to also teach people the things that we learned in the moment that we maybe wished we'd known before. And just to give a voice to the folks that, you know, that are responsible for like so many amazing things that just don't get to, be heard.
Well, yeah, I really enjoy it. And it's, I mean, it's just, it's so fascinating. And very, I don't know, it's good education. 'Cause you know, people go out and consume movies, but it's like, do you know how many fucking people were involved in putting this thing together? You know,
it's insane.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's insane.
This was a blast. You were so open, and like, I thank you so much for being able to talk with me for a while.
Yeah, man. Thank you for reaching out.
Yeah, dude. Thank you so much.
Are you guys working on anything right now? You'd be able to talk about?
Oddly, we're actually working on a Disney show.
Nice.
which is the one thing that we're. Yeah, it's I mean, it's honestly, it's a lot like our old action adventure stuff. It's for a younger audience. So it's been really fun. It's been a nice kind of balance. It's brought some balance to the genre work that we've been doing. But that's kind of, I mean, that and the podcast have been the things that we've really pushed hard, I guess. What else can we talk about? Is there anything else?
Their first note on our script for Disney was that it can't be that scary. They were like, you know, this is, it's Disney XD, but the audience, we can't do this. we had to rein some of it back.
Oh, well, I'd like to see that, the first version on screen. But you guys, thank you so much for hanging out we hung out for more than an hour. I can't believe it. So I just thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, guys.
This was great. Thank you so much.
Take
care.
Man,
have a good night.
You too.
Bye.
There you have it. That's it. We're done. Thank you to Matt and Tyler. Our theme music is Ghosts of Emery by Donnelly Family Reunion. Like us on Facebook at The Basement on a Hill. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Scary Shit Radio. And of course, you can listen to us on SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, and everywhere else you get your podcasts. You guys, please go to iTunes, give us a rating and a review, and tune in next week. Billy Peck is in the basement. Remember, mental mindfuck can't be nice. Happy New Year. Go, Cubs! She bended so quickly. A nightmare never had a chance. She bended.
podcast you just heard is part of the B&E Network, brought to you by BMovies and eBooks.com.